Welcome to this very special edition of This. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today I have pulled together with such gratitude some of the baddest, most amazing ladies who are leading in life and leading in work. I'm absolutely honored to know them, first of all, to call them my friends, and to have them here today. Thank you all so much and welcome, ladies.
Hello. Thank you for having us, Shauna.
Yeah, absolutely. So now I'm going to give a little bit of context for the audience here. These ladies are all leading in places and spaces that aren't traditionally where women have been. We've got sports, entertainment, the music side, tech, media, agency. And, you know, I think all of you have been pioneering in your journeys. So I just, again, it's remarkable what you're doing, what you have done, and you're really paving the way and carrying the torch. So, without further ado, I will ask you all to please introduce yourselves. And Lillian, we're going to start with you.
Thank you so much for having all of us. It's been so wonderful to kind of reconnect with some of my favorite women in the world who I've learned so much from over the last few years. My name is Lillian Majeed. I am the global diversity, inclusion, and belonging officer for Universal Music Group, which is the largest music company in the world.
Incredible. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. I can't say enough. It's an honor, one, to be here. And thank you so much. A little fun fact, Shauna was my boss at the Net. So I do anything and everything for her because she has just been such a blessing to me, both personally and professionally. But I am Kelly Coleman. I'm SVP of Global Content and Experience at Nielsen.
Thank you.
Hey, Shauna, thank you so much. As always, still a badass, and we appreciate all of you. And I'm really fangirling right now. So happy to see so many amazing women to share this stage with. So appreciate the invitation. My name is Renee Tirado. I am currently the founder and principal for Vega Robles Consulting. And prior to that, I served as the global head of diversity, equity, and inclusion for Gucci and Major League Baseball.
Incredible. Thank you so much. Amy, you want to go ahead?
I do. So like the rest, very privileged to be amongst this group of wonderful, wonderful women, and also great to reconnect with Lillian from our days at the NBA. But currently vice president of team business operations for the Connecticut Sun of the WNBA.
Hello, everyone. It is really nice to meet a lot of you. I am just overwhelmed by the amount of talent on this call and happy to be here. So my name is Julie Hammer, and I am a partner and chief engagement officer at a brand new company called Metal and Rise.
Nice.
Hi, everyone. Liz Delulo Brown. I'm a marketing communications professional with Little League. Oversee, you know, marketing communications for the organization, and I also want to add, importantly, a mom of two, because I feel like that's relevant to today's conversation.
Absolutely. Moms of humans and furry kids. We'll celebrate all of it. And Sandra.
Hi, glad to be here. Sandra Lopez, responsible for leading the Microsoft Advertising Business and Marketing Group. So glad to be here. And I admire all of your work. It takes courage. So look forward to having the conversation around women in sports, media, and tech.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much. So listeners, as we're going along, we are going to do our best for me to either call people's names or for folks to say their name as they start talking, realizing obviously this is some people watch on video, some people are listening as it's now a podcast. So we're going to jump into a quick exercise that uses these actually curious cards. And I had the founder, Michael Tennant, on the podcast previously, and he has this amazing game called Actually Curious. And it is to spark in trust and empathy, sparking conversation. And so I think part of the reason why I brought this into this conversation is because all of you demonstrate qualities of empathy, as well as being able to trust others and have them trust you. So I wanted to bring it forward. And you all are fantastically authentic. So this is a real talk game for sure. So here goes with our first question. Lillian, I'm going to have you answer first. And then everybody can kind of pile on, jump on. So first question is, what are you willing to fight for and why?
I am passionate about a lot. Those of you who know me well know that. If I had to pick one thing, it's like belonging. Like I am obsessed with the concept of belonging. I'm obsessed with people feeling like they belong because we're in a culture of disconnection. We were before the pandemic. It's exacerbated itself during the pandemic as well. And when you look at the number of people who describe themselves as frequently or regularly lonely, it breaks my heart, particularly after we just lost such a bright, bright and brilliant star a few days ago to suicide. So I'm willing to fight for people feeling safe, seen, heard, appreciated and respected.
Yes. Thank you. I love it.
I'll jump in on that one in a little bit differently, but probably building on exactly what Lillian is talking about. I will always fight for the underdog, especially if there's someone or something that I feel is like being treated unfairly, unreasonably, inequitably, and it might stem from the work that I've done historically, but if there's something there, I'm going to go in for that person, thing, initiative, 100%, because there is, especially as loud as the world has become, there's a remarkable amount of silence, especially around what's right and doing the right thing and also the smart thing. I think we're just leaning into what's immediately seems like a good hashtag. So where the underdog's voice is not heard, being leveraged, or just acknowledged, you know, for me, I'm pulling out, as we would say in our urban communities, the earrings are coming off and we're going to slap on a little bit of Vaseline and go to the ends. So that's me.
I love it, Renee. And I will tell you, you walk that talk. And I think I'll say this. You and I met at the Sports Business Journal Game Changers Conference, where we were both honored that time. And I don't know if you knew it or you were able to sense it, but I sure felt insecure and like a bit of an underdog in that space. And you came forward and I was like, this amazing woman is walking towards me. What is she going to say? And you commented on my jacket. And I was like, just the thing you said, it just gave me calm. And I felt like, to what you were saying, Lillian, I felt like I belonged. I felt like, but it is in that moment, I felt like an underdog there that day. So you walk it. And I thank you for that.
It was an intimidating day for all of us. And I remember that jacket. I was like, this woman has swag. I like that. So you know what, whatever you were feeling that day, you did not convey that. And I wanted you to know that. It was amazing. So thank you for that,
Anna. Thank you.
At my own peril, I'll follow these two amazing women. But this is Amy, and I'm assuming everyone will just recognize me from my Jersey accent. But for me, I will always fight for my team at work. Whether they make a mistake or whether they're perfect, I want them to always know that someone has their back and that they can take risk without punishment, that they're always going to have a cheerleader by their side. So for me, I will always, always fight for any member of my team and make sure that they feel like they've got the weight of the world off their shoulders and that they know someone's going to always be there to lift them up when they need it.
And that is leadership. Absolutely, Amy. Julie.
Yeah, Amy, I love that. And have really enjoyed the comments so far. So yes, this is Julie. And I will always fight for the next generation of leaders and those that that will come after us and really pave the way and their value, like help to mold their values and work with them and really kind of be that person to throw the rope behind me to lift them up. And I did that in my previous work in college athletics, working with student athletes in particular, but I think the young people have truly inspired me as of late. And, I find hope in where they want this world to go. So I would also add, Liz, to what you mentioned before, I also have two small children. So when I think about the next generation of leaders, it's being a good role model for them and instilling values in my two young boys as well.
Great.
I'll hook on to both of you. This is Liz. Related and similar to Amy, it's teamwork generally. And and trying to eliminate the I in any way possible, because, and especially with my work in youth sports and having children and so forth, it is, we are in an I society, especially with social media, and but teamwork wins, right? And collaboration wins. So I will fight for that for sure.
Thanks.
I think I'll jump in. I mean, I think Lillian brought it to home, like belonging is something that I'm so passionate about. And I think all what everyone said here, but I think, you know, being on this panel today, I'm going to fight for women. I'm going to fight for women to have a seat at the table, to build their own table. I'm going to fight for people, for women after me coming in. I'm very much connected to my sorority in that way. We're doing a lot of work with women, especially in college, and educating Black women. And so I think what all of your points, from the next generation to belonging, the underdog, they all run true. And I think most importantly, I'm passionate about seeing women, that all women, but especially women that look like me, at the table, sitting next to me, going further than me. I tell everyone that leaves my team, I can't wait to work for you one day, because you have all of the juice, you have all of the sauce to take it there. So each and every one of you has said something that has resonated with me that kind of culminates into I want to see more of us sitting here. I want Shauna to have a panel with the next generation of women that we would admire and look forward to seeing in the workplace.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I want to draw from what Kelly just said. I want to see more of us than I fight for at the C-level and board level. The 1% is deciding how society is going to be shaped. And so I'm very committed at the C-level, but I think there's one word about fight, and I was bringing attention to my team, is that it takes courage, because I don't know about you guys, but I have received death threats. I've had to go in hiding. I've had to, obviously, like texts that you get, because people do, I think Renee, you said this, they want to silence us. Mm-hmm. And so the courage to be willing to speak up and have the purpose. And I think, like, Black History Month, you look up, you think about Martin Luther King, like, you have to be willing to arguably even die in the context of doing something good. So I think the word fight has multidimensional meaning, and it's not easy, and the struggle is real. And I'm so proud of what all of you guys do. And I think that's, I mean, it takes courage to speak up and ensure that we're not silenced. So thank you all for your efforts.
Yeah, that's such a great, that is such a great point, you know, and I think it's probably gotten less difficult over time to stay silent as leaders. I was actually having this conversation with someone yesterday, that it has been challenging coming up, trying to find that courage. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, about finding your voice. But, you know, I do think that you get to a point in your career where you're like, it's harder for me to stay silent. And, you know, so I appreciate all of you in the way that you're doing that, coming forward today. As I said before we started recording, it's real talk. So let's get into it further than the cards. And if we have time, I'll pull another one of the cards. But I think some of you touched on this a little bit. A lot of times on these episodes, we talk about evolution, and evolution is your career, but also your evolution as a person, a woman, a person of color, a person in the LGBTQ community, you know, as you've evolved. And so I think those two go hand in hand. You can't just silo things out. So, you know, I'd love to hear, what are your thoughts about, since it is Women's Month that we're, you know, honoring all of you for, let's talk about the realness of evolution of women. Because some in business, in life, in career, and my husband chimed in, don't forget about the, you know, the government. So, you know, I think, like, is there progress or not? Because some days I think so. And then other days I join a panel or a conference call and I'm the only woman and there's all these middle-aged white men. And I'm like, you know, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I don't think there's been progress. Absolutely not. I love Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what she says in terms of Supreme Court, why just 50%? Like, they could be 100%. So as you're looking at the overall business climate, I have not seen change. And arguably at times we're seeing a setback with COVID, because mm-hmm. many people had to make the decision, are you going to stay at work or are you going to stay home and, you know, be the teacher? And so I believe there was a study that came out that from a female leadership perspective, we went back over a decade. And so in terms of the, we've had reversed evolution, right? So massive opportunity. We have to bring attention to that and ensure that we're doing everything that everybody's saying, like bringing diverse candidates in, ensuring everybody belongs, and being flexible, because a lot of the females are shouldering the burden of life post-COVID.
Yeah, Sandra, that's such a great point, you know, and I do think somewhere about a month or so ago, I heard the staggering stat that is still, you know, women at that C-suite, at that top level is only, I think you just mentioned it right now, like 1%. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's insane. And that's what I mean about, you know, some days it seems like there's been no progress at all. When we're seeing like women's voting rights come into question, you know, abortion come into question, all of that, I'm like, what is going on? So anybody else want to lean in on that one?
I was just going to say, I 100% agree with Sandra. I feel like there has been, you know, you take one step forward and then there's two steps back. I think there's been a lot of performative work being done. I think there's a lot of let's do it to be seen, let's do it to work, but the structure and the building blocks to actual change are still the same. And I am very much of burn it down, break it down, because with those structures still being in place, and you can post whatever you want on LinkedIn, you can have the diverse slate. If you're not actually putting that into practice, if you're not paying your diverse talent, if you're not paying people, women, whatever it is, then you're just, it's all performative to me. And I think there's a lot of work to be done, structural work to reorganize, to redo, to break down these systems, because a lot of it is systematic. And so I feel like there's a lot of work to be done there that we're just not there yet.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll plus one that I think to that end, it has been extraordinarily performative. And I think the proof is in the pudding, to Kelly's point and to Sandra's point, a lot of it has been for optics. And, you know, it's proven, right? Like, you will see a lot more ads and you'll see a lot more, you know, platforms of women speaking and entrepreneurship, et cetera. But when you look at the businesses and you peel back the onion and you really look, you know, health and childcare investments are at the lowest point they've been in decades, you know, and they're not increasing at the pace at which they need them. Flexible work is having a moment right now, but I know it's starting to wane. And these are things that impact women disproportionately. So we'll always, you know, kind of cut off the trajectory unless we, to Kelly's point, burn it down and start over and kind of reassess what our investments are going to be, and also how we're starting to, as companies, really starting to define profitability. And we have to kind of start putting humans into that equation and that conversation. And we haven't done that yet. So until those kind of things and everything that my colleagues have just said here really start to be dissected, overhauled, and really become an equity conversation, I think it'll flatline, if not decline, in the upcoming future.
100% agree. Agree with everything that these brilliant women just said. And we'll add that we have to stop telling this lie to women, that the reason that we are where we are is because we're not confident enough, that we need to be fixed, that there are all these things that we need to do to feel more confident, feel more empowered. If we just felt more of these things, then we would be where we are. Like, absolutely not. That is a huge lie. That is absolute things that are important for everybody, whether they're a man or a woman, but it also has to be accompanied by this mass social change as well. Because until people enhance or believe in the value of women, in the equal value of women, so that they should be paid the same, so they should have all of the things and even more that others do, then we're never ever going to get to this place. So I would love for us to stop blaming women and our lack of confidence and our lack of our deficiencies for where we are, for why we are where we are.
So I'm curious, we've got some people on here who've had roles specifically, and still do, in the DEI space. I know that Lillian and Renee, you have really focused in that area. Kelly, I know you have impacted that area of your company. I think all of the people on this call have impacted that, you know, their companies, the people they know. But I'd love to hear more about, like, what is actually happening in, like, structurally from a DEI perspective within companies, where it's actually creating the change. Is there anything, because we have people who are listening that are at various levels of seniority in their company, is there anything that you can all share that's either helped the momentum, that's made it stick, or anything that's really actually like made it fail at companies?
Definitely, when you tie people's compensation to performance and to results, that is has been what has driven most of the change. But I'm really glad, I know Kelly mentioned this and Renee echoed as well. Companies who recognize that it's not all about fixing people, but it's about doing a root cause analysis, understanding how systems and structures and practices maintain and hold up the status quo. And are willing to do that root cause analysis and have the really tough conversations to change those systems are the ones that are going to be most longstanding and sustainable as a whole. Because a lot of the things that we do, let's do a development program, and they are absolutely helpful as well. But sometimes they send the message that in order to advance, you have some deficiency that you need to fix as a whole, as opposed to us looking at salary and equity and how people are evaluated and how people are measured and what are the things that are the inequities around there, whether or not a lot of the reasons that you advance are because of who you know versus your actual competencies as well. So the companies that are going, I think, to see the longest, most sustainable changes are the ones that really invest the time in doing root cause analysis and evaluating their systems versus just focusing on kind of band-aids that make people think that if their deficiencies are addressed, then they can become CEO as well.
Yeah, I would echo that. Yes, what I have seen different is definitely this analysis and deep dive into their policies, procedures, really, you know, trying to unpack where that bias can peek in and have the impact that sometimes you can't get back from. I think where I'm seeing the biggest risk right now with the DE&I space, in my humble opinion, is we're leaning maybe a little bit too much into targets and the quant, and not thinking about the qual enough. And there has to be a balance between the quantitative and the qualitative part of this conversation. So while I think targets are important, I think definitely having those data points to inform are invaluable. We also have to really invest a lot of more time in, you know, culture. Mm-hmm. You know, this is about culture change. Yeah. As well. And sometimes that's not as easily quantifiable. An engagement survey once a year does not really give a picture of your culture. I'm sorry. You catch a group of people on the wrong day, you're not going to get the actual, you know, core feelings of what's happening and how they feel. So I think there is a little bit of a danger that we're kind of getting away from the qualitative part of this and not really tapping into the communities that we are seeking to kind of provide that equity for and to build out that equity for and leveraging them and getting a pulse on how they're really feeling, perceiving, and experiencing their work experience. And in the absence of that voice, and this just goes to the bigger thing, and I know everyone here can say this, like DE&I cannot continue to be siloed into a department or an individual. I'm glad that there's like every company in the world has a DE&I person now. Like, this is amazing. This is awesome. But I want to be very careful that the onus does not remain there. It is supposed to be about, if you're talking about systemic shift and cultural shift and really, really undoing processes, procedures, and policies, everybody has to own a piece of that game. A piece of that puzzle and have their part in it. Otherwise, quite frankly, we'll be having the same conversation in another 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. I do not do a presentation to anyone without talking about shared responsibility to that exact point that this is not just on me and my team, it's a shared responsibility. And here's what it is. Agree.
I was just gonna add to those two points. And I think doing it right, there's also a level of transparency that has to be involved with this. I think as an employee, when we can talk about these things and these leadership meetings, but if we're not transparent about where we are and where we're not doing that great and where we need or where we are having some success, I think that also breeds into the culture. And to Renee's point around culture and that qualitative piece, it has to be embedded into the company strategy. That's where I have seen people win or see some type of incremental success when the culture piece is embedded in the company strategy. It is not sitting with someone who has Lillian's role or someone that has someone else's role in the DE&I team. It is sitting with all of us and in the culture, and being transparent about it, I think, is critical.
Amy? Yeah, and to add on that too, is, you know, we had an interesting meeting with a potential sponsor a couple months ago, and they don't know how to get themselves involved in the DE&I space. So the conversation was centered around one of our platforms called Change Can't Wait. And we said, like, listen, like, we're not here to check a box for you. This has to be very much a part of your core values, like it is ours. And if this is not something that you believe in deeply, then this is not a partnership. This has to be something that is part of your core values of your company, and that it's an internal thing. You're not checking an external box and using our assets to check a box so you can get into the community. This has to be part of your core value as an organization and as a company. And it starts with your team, your employees, and then it goes from there. And so, you know, they're trying to figure it out. They don't know how to figure it out. And they thought for us, they were just going to come to the Connecticut Sun and check a box. And we were like, no. Figure your internal stuff out. Start with your mission, your purpose of your company. Is it a core value for you? And if it is, let's talk. Mm-hmm. But if it's not, we're certainly not going to be the cool partner for you to check a box and say to your employees, look what we did. So I do think companies have to really mean it and not just try to check a box. I think that's really important.
Liz?
Yeah, I was going to sort of note, I mean, I don't hold a traditional sort of diversity and inclusion role, but I do wholeheartedly agree with what Kelly was saying. It's everybody's responsibility. And I spend a lot of time with my team, even, you know, the most junior coming in, helping them to understand that the best thing you can do is develop your emotional intelligence skills, spend time on self-awareness, because what you need to do to add to the culture is begin to understand where everybody's coming from and how they add value and how you can add value and become a better team player. So I do think that's really important, that to recognize how important it is to develop the culture is everybody's responsibility. And I think that's often placed on leadership. Leadership is the guide, but it's up to everyone to really make change and become part of that that willingness and acceptance and sort of self-actualization that is important to make that change.
Yeah. I love this conversation because we've hit on our, like, holding ourselves accountable as leaders, holding the people around us as leaders, the company, but then also what Amy talked about is, and what I mentioned earlier is, people actually holding other companies accountable and other companies responsible. And so this is where I think we, you know, just start to affect the bar raising to some degree. Before we go on, Sandra or Julie, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I just want to, I feel if I'm in the biggest case study in terms of Microsoft, I just joined, and it's all of that. And it's really fascinating. It starts with Satya, the CEO, a leader with amazing empathy, and they put structural changes. And so every single day you have to live in this model coach care. Diversity inclusion is part of the DNA. They don't track once a year. We have pulses, we have connects. And what I thought was most fascinating recently, we were going through a promo discussion, and the first question is that person actively engaged in driving diversity and inclusion within the business and outside? Number one question. And if not, should they be getting promoted? And I thought that was just fascinating. And so there is hope. There are companies like Microsoft, and I look at Satya, I mean, the leader that really leads every single day and understands empathy and not necessarily being included given his family structure and his child, but it gives us hope. And there is case studies and references. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, this is Julie. I'll just, I don't want to belabor the point, but I just wanted to share my perspective as someone who has had experience at an institution of higher education and sort of has seen some really exceptional hiring practices put into place over the past couple of years. And having been helping as a client, you know, helping them kind of through that process of what are the right questions to ask? What are we, you know, who's coming to the table as part of the hiring committee, for example, and what is the lens that they're approaching all of this through? I want to couple that with where I'm at right now with a brand new company and having the opportunity from the ground up to build and set that culture and to really consider what our values are, to your point of, you know, how are we holding ourselves accountable and what are the metrics that we're putting in place? What are the beliefs that we have and how are we growing that from the ground up? So more to come for sure, but I think it's a really exciting place that we're at with the, with Metal and Rise, the new company that we're starting. And it's a time for us to educate ourselves and to really kind of put some really nice guardrails in place for future growth as well.
Yeah. And that's a great point. Oh, go ahead, Lillian.
Oh, you're right. I'll say it after you say
it. I was just going to say, I love to hear you say that, Julie, because I think it's like, there's no business that's like, you can't be too small or too big. Every business, I think this impacts. And so even if you're like, when I was creating SLG Impact, when I had been laid off, it was so important to me to have a diverse board of advisors. And Kelly has been with me and believed in me since the beginning. And so, you know, I think, again, it's just an example of, you know, needing to walk that, be that, no matter how big or small the company is. So Lillian?
I was just going to quickly say, I think it's important for us before we leave the conversation about DEI is to really talk about the fear that is at the foundation of why it's difficult for us to get past where we are. There is a fear of the loss of power. And there are so many forces of the status quo that are sending headwinds across every single thing that we do. And this latest movement that we had over the last few years after George Floyd's murder, I feel has like made it even more difficult to get our work done. And so I think we have to acknowledge that there is a lot of fear. We're still afraid to have the conversation around race. We still haven't normalized the conversation around race. We are still scared to talk about topics related to the LGBTQ plus community. And like this fear of the loss of power is honestly, and our commitment to silencing ourselves, silencing America's true history is, is until we are able to have these conversations, these really painful and difficult conversations, and acknowledge how the people in power got to be in power and why they stay in power. Yeah. None of the things that we are working around systemically and regarding people is going to be as effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for saying that so authentically and coming forward with that. I think it's, you know, I think the thing that's coupled with that is the people who are cling to, and I call it kind of like hogging a seat of power. And it's also like this self, that fear goes along with self-preservation. And so the absolute bullshit I see that go on when people are like clinging to that power and they will do anything for their self-preservation is, you know, at the expense of others, like enough, you know, and I found, you know, my voice more in speaking out against it. Also seeing myself at this point in my career, not only not taking it and, you know, acting out against it, speaking out against it for myself and others. And so, you know, I just really appreciate you laying it out there like that.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. I think we need to also think about the power of language. And I think we need to start creating some new language around this. And I think it's going to come from the voice of women, to be quite candid. Because if you think about, to Lillian's point, this fear of power and this fear of loss of power, and it's like, you know, it's all about what about me? I hear that about what about me? What about me? What about me? We got to kind of shift it to what about we, and not have that be like equated to being socialist or something so negative. There's just, we have to start creating, and younger people, the newer generation, they're good at this. They're all about creating their own language, their own terms. You know, we need to embrace that a little bit more and figure out this language that, you know, kind of embraces the reckoning that we have to have as a country, you know, the strength that we as women have to shore up on and kind of step into the middle of this conversation a lot more aggressively. And to Sandra's point, without the fear of the ramifications and the pressures that comes with it. It's hard, it's a lot, but there has to be, you know, some new structures put in place. And I think some of that is about how we're talking about this to allow for all the platforms that we have to actually gather some more strength and like push these conversations in the forefront and initiate that change. I think we're waiting for change instead of like really pushing and initiating it aggressively. And we have to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I think is a good one. I've mentioned this a couple times throughout our session here today. But I think we're gonna have people who are listening to this that are like, wow, these are amazing ladies who have found their voice. They stand strong in their voice. We talked about courage previously. And I would, for me, this took time and evolution of my own self to be able to stand in my strength and use my voice and create a platform where I'm shining the light on others. And I'm curious for those of you who, you know, all of you now who are able to similarly stand in your strength, use your voice for self and others, like, were you always this way? What helped you get this way? Was it kind of like just enough is enough and I'm going to break out? Was there coaching or someone that you look to? I say that because I would just love to hear, but also so that people who are listening can also be like, oh, I'll get there one day too if I want to. So anybody want to field that one?
I can jump in and just say, I think it's a choice. It's an active choice. And Shauna, I think I've shared this with you before. It is an active choice to wake up every day and choose myself and know my worth and to know that's an active thing that I do every day because of the world and all of the things that we just discussed that are systemic and structures and people doing and self-preservation and all of those things are butting up against you. And I wake up every day and have to choose it. It's not something that is, I just, you know, constantly or every day, this is who I am. I wake up and it's a verb for me. I actually choose this work every day. And then I think it's platforms like this. I think, you know, personally, thanking you for giving me an opportunity to share my voice. I think building those and thinking about, you know, thinking about the next generation and building on that allows me to say, I can do this. Shauna believes in my voice and in what I have to say. So I can sit here on a panel with such distinguished women in all of their fields and in their personal lives and have a conversation about this. And so I think it's, for me, it's an action every single day.
Absolutely.
No, I think life is interesting, right? Like a lot of times we start our career, we're sort of in a selfish place, right? It's about me, me, me. I want to elevate. I want to elevate. I want to elevate. So you come from a very selfish position. And, you know, Shauna, you and I talked about a little bit about this, but one of my very best friends put me in a position to come in and mentor someone to help teach them to run a team. And I was like, I don't really like people that much, but I'll give it a try. And it turned out to be the most amazing eye-opening thing of my life to show that I actually love mentoring and I love teaching. And now I actually go out of my way to make sure that I am engaging with young kids who link me in. I'm giving opportunity to kids that maybe would not have that. And the flip side of like this whole self-preservation thing, by the way, is when you give people these opportunities very selfishly, it's really rewarding. So on the other flip side of this self-preservation thing is the fact that it has been so rewarding for me very selfishly to be able to give these young adults opportunity to be able to take this kid who was the first generation to go to college and help him fulfill his dream. So there is a lot of like, when you come around to this point of like, it's not about me anymore, it is probably I'm probably in the most rewarding part of my career now. That, you know, listen, I love running a team. It's what I've given my career to, but the fact that I've probably had 8 people on my staff now, and I'm actually helping them give them the start, is probably the most rewarding thing I have done. And we have a former player in our front office. And I just said to her the other day, I said, Morgan, you're just really kicking ass right now. And she goes, I'm just trying to be like you. And I'm like, no, you're going to be better than me. You're going to be in the corner office. And she's like, you know what? You're right. And so like the moments like that are the ones I think for me that matter now. So, you know, I had to have someone slap me across the face and teach me this, right? It definitely didn't come to it myself. But she's helped put me in a place where it's been the most rewarding, I think, phase of my career.
And I'll just jump in on that and build, because I was going to say, I think I'm where I'm. I've always tried to strive to be where Kelly is about having and remembering that it's my choice. But to Amy's point, I think it also takes having that squad around you, right? Like the people that kind of, and I had that. I didn't have that confidence, and I didn't get it till like mid later in my career. And it really became because I had like sponsors and people who were like encouraging me and pushing me behind the scenes. And like, you know, one boss that basically said, yeah, I know you don't like to do this, and I know you're uncomfortable, and I know, but you're going to, and this is why I don't care. And then it was like those little pushes, those nudges, Amy having someone say, I think you need to mentor her. Cause I'm like, Amy, I would be like, no, I'm good. I'm good with that. But that person convinced you. And then you're like, wow, this is not as painful. It's not as scary. It's not as unnerving as I think. And I hope that brings up your confidence. So you get to the place where you're like Kelly and you can get up with an intention to be that voice for yourself and other people. So I think you need a combination of the both. I mean, Shauna, you and I had this exchange via email that I was like, I don't know if I'm the right person for this. I don't know. And you were like, of course you are. So like that type of thing, those type of people in your life and those touch points and experiences are how we continue to keep our voices amplified and continue to advocate for ourselves. Because if you can't advocate for yourself, you can't advocate for anyone else. Advocating for ourselves and then advocating for others. So
absolutely. That is probably a great place for us to end this incredible call. I want to be sensitive to all of your time because you all have to go out and kick some ass today and go on with all you're doing. I thank you so much for the way each of you has touched my journey and all that you're doing to impact others and help everybody continue to evolve. So thank you so very much and have an amazing day, ladies.